Hey brokers, don't miss AIM Activate. Get ready to experience a brand new interactive event designed to help you attract, engage, and retain your audience with expert marketing techniques. Join us on Thursday, March 5th in Irvine, California for a hands-on workshop designed to enhance your marketing skills. Head over to aimgroup.com/activate to get your tickets. Hey, welcome to Broker to Broker. This podcast is all about real talk from one broker to another. Each week, we'll be talking with an AIM member about their journey into the broker channel, their challenges, and unique insights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to Broker to Broker, brought to you by AIM, Association of Independent Mortgage Experts. I am your host, JP Hussey of the Hussey Team Mortgage Advisors. And today we have Todd Bitter, the legend, the god of mortgages, right? What Casa calls you, at least.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a little overblown.
I'm sure it is. And I feel you, man, but I had to say that, right? JKS Mortgage, right?
Yes.
LLC.
Yeah.
What's that stand for?
Well, JKS was around before I was part of it.
Okay.
It stands for James Kevin Smith, who is my so-called, he's owner, partner. He didn't have the most creative idea about a name of a company, but it works, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of funny in the names of mortgage companies, right?
Yeah.
They're either really vague or not thought out or overly thought out, you know, if that makes sense, you know?
No, yeah,
you're seeing a lot of cool names come out nowadays. Like our buddy, if you saw Chris Griffith, he's Debt Does Deals. It's a pretty cool, it's a cool name.
No, and
it's
it different. Is cool. Yeah. And I don't know why, for whatever reason, JKS flows, unless it's just I've said it now a gazillion times, but to me it kind of flows and,
That's part of marketing or messaging a bit. It's got to flow.
I mean, I don't think JFQ JFQ is actually,
JFQ?
Maybe that's not their name.
Either way.
Yeah. Anyway,
it'll pop later.
ZYX or something. You know.
All right. So you're from, you live not from in Phoenix.
Yeah.
But you're from
Phoenix area.
Cincinnati?
Yeah. Cincinnati originally.
So you're kind of an East Coast guy a little bit, right?
Yeah. You know, I've been gone long enough that this cold weather's killing me. So,
yeah. I got you. All right. So out in Arizona now, how long have you been out there for?
12 years.
Okay. But you've been in the industry 25.
It's crazy. Long time, quarter century.
So you did mortgages out in Cincinnati at some point, or you moved around? If you want to give me a little background.
No, I started in the mortgage business in Cincinnati, and that's obviously back in the 90s. And I was telling somebody earlier today, they said, well, did you start in, retail? Where'd you start? And I was like, well, I started in like a medium size mortgage banker, where we closed some loans in our name, we brokered some loans out,
like a correspondent type,
lot of subprime stuff like that. I was new to business, I didn't know the difference, I was just a mortgage guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling this other guy this morning, he's like, well, what made you switch to being a broker? I said, I don't know, we just left, and me and a couple guys that were there left and went somewhere else, and we were brokers. We didn't know we were brokers. We were.
You just got the deals done. I mean, that's kind of what I get, and that's kind of how I am too. What I get from you is, listen, let's do the right thing by the client, get them done, move on with our lives. Yeah. Doesn't matter what label you have on you, do it the right way, right?
Yeah, and I do think back then, I think before the housing market crash in 2008, I don't really remember the big, I'm retail, I'm a bank, I'm a broker. I mean, I think there was more of a blurred line there. You had your banks and then you had others. And like I said, when I became a broker, I didn't even really know that I'd become a broker. I just knew that we were like a little small shop that was hiring loan officers and brokering all of our deals. Right. But, then later it became more defined. I think the housing crash
made it become defined, maybe?
It did. And I was a broker through the whole thing, so.
Yeah, let's get to that. So you were in Cincinnati, then you went right to Arizona from there?
Well, yeah, I did the really.
Early 2000s, maybe?
No, I went to Arizona basically right before the housing crash.
Okay.
I was really smart. You know, I was in Cincinnati and I was doing really well. And I thought, you know, hey, I'm the, as Anthony likes to call it, I'm the great Todd Bitter, you know, greatest loan officer alive. Yeah, you know, I can go to Arizona and kill it like everybody else out there. Well, you know, I get to Arizona, I know like one person in the whole state, and then the whole market decides to crash. And I'm standing there going, okay, I know nobody. I know nothing. I don't know what houses. I don't even know. Somebody tells me they're living in Glendale. I'm like, Glendale what?
Yeah.
You know? I really had to completely refocus my mindset because there's nothing. The refis are dead. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in Arizona was upside down.
Well, that's what I remember. That was one of the markets, right? That you had a big mansions and do you ever watch the show Arrested Development?
Yeah,
I remember there was an episode, and it was in Arizona, and there were squatters living in the house. Yes. But that was a point made that area really got killed, and you got there right when it came.
Yeah, I mean, we were what they referred to as a sand state, meaning that I think they joke because, you know, we have a lot of sand, but California, Arizona, Nevada, and Florida just got decimated. Mm-hmm. And we had areas where houses, like when I moved there, they were selling for $300,000. That you could suddenly pick up for $120,000, $130,000. I mean, less than 50 cents on the dollar. So there was nothing available except for purchases. They were starting the HARP program, but in the very beginning of the HARP program, it wasn't open to outside lender. You had to go back through your original lender.
Yeah.
At the very beginning.
I remember that, yep.
So my first year and a half in Arizona or so, I mean, I literally had to just go out and hustle realtors and scrape and scrounge for anything I could get. And it was a rough go for probably about 2 years.
Yeah.
But you know what? I look back on it and yeah, it was a bad 2 years, but it was the greatest 2 years of my life now because it totally made me refocus everything I do, everything.
Well, you just did about 12 years or so or whatever it was in Cincinnati and you had to start over. So it was probably, in hindsight, like you said, better for you to just start.
If the housing crash had never happened, I'd be in Arizona. I'd probably be doing well, but I'd still be doing a bunch of
bad
subprime
practices
and, you know, a lot of refis. And, you know, before the housing crash, I wasn't exactly the most friendly loan officer towards realtors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I realized really quick in 2009 and late '08, you either had realtor business or you were pretty much going to go flip burgers at McDonald's or something because there was nothing, there was just no refis to be had.
There was nothing. And it wasn't like today's day and age where you can kind of, there wasn't social media.
No.
So it wasn't like you're getting one-offs from there or building relationships.
Not at all.
Back then, it was all realtors for the most part, from what you remember.
Yeah, I mean, you had guys that were doing some refis, but they were refinancing their old customers where I had no old customers in
Arizona.
You
had nothing anyway.
Yeah, it started over from scratch. So a lot of guys left the business, and again,
you think that helped you out a bit?
It did.
Too?
Yeah. It did because a lot of guys left that were used to easy money, and they were suddenly faced with, you know, okay, well, I'll go sell cars or something else and make money. So a lot of guys left. I just focused hard on realtors, and I started realizing really fast the way to get to a realtor was not necessarily cold calling and bugging them, but doing it through organic ways like title companies and things of that nature. And so when everybody else was out there in 2009 scrambling, trying to figure out what to do, I was making friends with title agents and appraisers, even though that's assumed to be dead.
Yeah.
But at the time it wasn't.
So back in the day, you could just call appraisers. I got in 2011, so I missed all of it, you know, and I got in right when the comp changes.
Yeah, like right up until, what was it, May, I think, of 2009?
Okay.
I think it was May or June of 2009 was when HVCC went into effect. And, we used to have our appraisers. And I call up, Kyle's one of them out in Arizona. And I call Kyle and I say, Kyle, you know, 123 Main Street, you know, can you get me $300,000 out of this place? He called me back half hour later. Yeah, I can make that work. Or no, it's going to be a push, you know. And yeah, I mean, that's part of what HVCC came into a play because...
Yeah, what do you think about that? Like, do you wish we could have some communication? Like, obviously, you weren't the one like, oh, I'll do this here, I'm giving you all this money, whatever happened back then. But there's something about having a convo with an appraiser to see if something's going to work, right?
I wish we could have the conversations with them. I wish we could have more direct influence, or not influence, but direct contact.
Contact,
The influence was the problem.
That, right, you know, correct.
Again, back in the day, I would call up whoever, say, I'll use Kyle as an example. I'd call Kyle and say, hey, you know, can you, do you think this is worth $300,000 before I have customers spend money? Mm-hmm. And he'd look at it and say, yeah, it's okay. Or no, you're going to be a little short, I think, unless there's something spectacular about the house. Mm-hmm. I don't see a problem with that. It saved the customers money. Right. It saved everybody time. The problem was, is that you had guys out there that were feeding, say, Kyle. Mm-hmm. And would tell Kyle, well, you know, look, if you can't get this for me, somebody else down the street will, and, you know, and yeah. To hell with future business. You know? So I think you had appraisers felt pressured. And even though I never did, maybe Kyle, so to say, felt pressured.
Yeah.
Know, like he felt like he had to hit numbers. If he didn't come through quite enough for me, I would go elsewhere. And maybe that's true. I don't know. I mean, so I think that the system we're under now, as much as it's aggravating, it's a necessary evil in mm-hmm. some sense. And I think we're getting in a groove now. I mean, I, mm-hmm. I know I am. I don't even think twice about the old days for appraisals. I mean, yeah, it's. I think back and think, oh, it'd be nice, but it's never really a second thought.
Yeah, I mean, I always wondered, like the men and women that were in the industry then that stayed all the way through it, like, was it better back then? Was it, you know, I don't know because I wasn't touched by that.
Yeah. I will say this. I feel for the newer people in the business nowadays. Mm-hmm. I think guys that came into business like you post-crash mm-hmm. that have been successful. I mean, my hats are off to guys like you guys because I do think it's a much more difficult business to break into today than mm-hmm. what it was. My first loan that I ever sold back in the mid-90s was a stated value, 125% LTV second mortgage. So we had a product.
So everything was rolled in, right? 120, right? So everything's rolled in and there's no verification of anything.
I remember this loan like it was the last loan I did. People owed $80,000 on the house. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the house is probably worth about 85 or 90. They had done an FHA the year before with somebody else. So I think it was a bank or whoever. Uh-huh. And they were desperate to debt consolidation. You know, we had a big telemarketing department where I was at. And I got this lead. And this lead said customer would like to debt consolidation a bunch of debt. And I looked at it, pulled their credit. And I think they were in the mid-sixes under credit scores. It wasn't like great credit.
Right.
It was okay. And we gave them...
Not good enough for a cash out probably or something. Yeah.
So... My manager, who was training me at the time, said, well, you know, you can do a stated value 125 up to a $50,000 loan amount, and it never gets reviewed. I'm like, well, they owe 80, and the house is worth maybe 90. He said, no. This house is worth 100 and whatever to whatever. Anyway, so 80 that they owed plus 50 is 130. And we just stated the value at whatever it took to get to 125%. So these people, I mean, right from the start, 125% loan to value is upside down. Mm-hmm. Well, these people are probably more like 140%. And I've seen people back in the day, 130, 40, 50% LTVs mm-hmm. in reality when we're calling them 125s. But yeah, we had these 125 stated. I mean, you didn't have to be a mortgage genius to be able to sell one of those.
Yeah,
you
know? Not at all.
And these rates were like 11%, you know, 9%.
And that 10%. Was that decent back then, though?
It was okay.
What was a conventional back? If something was like that was 10.
I think a conventional when I got into business was about right around 8% fixed.
So it was maybe two points higher.
Yeah,
for something
probably
like that.
A couple points, maybe three or four. I can't remember. I know it was in either the high single digits or low teens.
I've never seen 6, I don't think.
Wow.
And I got in 2011.
Yeah, that's probably right.
So I don't think I've seen it. The lowest 30-year no-point loan I did was 3.25 when I started Wells Fargo. And so I was like 2012.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Yeah. I get my parents' generation, they were paying 18, 19%.
Right. Yeah.
You know, my first house I bought was a 1-year FHA ARM at 8 1/8, and that was in 93, I think.
What was the value of the home, though? I always equate that. Rates were higher. Values were obviously a lot lower.
It was a brand-new house we had built, and we built it for $120,000, I think.
Yeah. You know? Like a four-bedroom?
Four-bedroom, 1,900 square foot. I mean, this is Cincinnati, too. So move that same house out to Scottsdale today, it'd probably be $400,000.
Yeah. You know? It's funny. The first house I bought was before I got in the mortgages, so I had zero idea. And 2006, I bought it. I was like 24, whatever, 25, and I had no idea. And I, at the time, I worked for my dad in insurance, and I played in a reggae slash metal type band for like 8-9 years. And I couldn't, it was a stated thing and no idea. And they said, all right, we need some extra income. Can you just write on a piece of paper? I literally wrote that I made an extra $500 a week from playing, which I didn't, and gave it to them. And that's how I got qualified. I still have that house to this day. And I still couldn't sell it.
Oh, wow.
You know, bought it for like 170. Values had dropped. It's in a tougher area outside the city. And I still couldn't, probably. Wow. I'd break even.
Well, and see, that's just it. I mean, well, you came in afterwards. But that's why I say it was easier. Like, I was, you know, when my first 6 months in the business, I was given leads. And I could just call them and sell loans. Mm-hmm. So you coming in after the fact, you had to actually be a mortgage broker. You had to actually be a professional loan officer. I just had to be a guy who could dial the phone and say, hey, do you want to take this loan?
Was there trust back then, too? Was there a bad, like, were mortgage people looked at like they were today? Because there's a lot of apprehension still.
Not at all.
And so that was easier, too. It was easier to do loans and trust was easy. Yeah. So I see what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, it all changed with the meltdown. I mean, you know, and a lot of it was earned on our behalf. I mean, again, I look back and look at all them 125s. I look at the pay option arms. I look at a lot of bad products that were available to us that we sold. And it wasn't, you know, and again, there was a discussion the other day on Facebook about the Jamie Dimon interview the other day. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, he created this. Well, yeah, a lot of them bankers did create it. And but they like to blame the broker. But, you know, we were just given daily rate sheets with this is your product. You sell it and you just sell what you're given. You know?
You're a soldier. Here's what it is. And let's do it.
But, I mean, there were some insane products back then. And like I said, it was easier. That's why I think it's harder for the younger people today. And when I say younger, not necessarily young just in age, just young in your career, getting into the business because you have to be a professional loan officer today to actually do the job. Where when I came in, you could be a convicted felon when I came into the business.
There was no licensing,
No background checks. I mean, maybe some companies are doing background checks. I mean, but there was a lot of bad apples in our business and they took those products and just used and abused them, you know, and I like to think I never really used and abused them. I sold some products I'm not proud of today, but yeah. So I think that the meltdown happened and I think that a lot of fingers got pointed. It was easy to point the fingers at the guys on the street, which was us. You had movies like The Big Short that came out or whatever that loved the point figure. They showed them two jackass car guys at the bar laughing about the hundreds of thousands
at the strip club or whatever.
I mean, it happened though.
So that movie you'd say it was a good movie for what happened.
It was a good movie.
And it was funny enough.
It painted a bad light on a lot of people. Hate to say it, but it was fairly accurate.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of guys I worked with that weren't the most, they're guys I wouldn't hire.
Yeah.
You know?
And, well, you don't hire anybody.
And well, no,
we're
going to
talk about
now,
a little bit anyway.
Yeah, my wife's on me. I need to assist. I'm actually talking to a guy right now.
Whoa, breaking news.
I don't know if it's going anywhere, but, you know, it's like, I don't know. I really do need help.
Well, can we talk about that, how your setup is? Because that's another thing that that makes you, I mean, again, there's a lot of people probably running a one-man shop, right? But you're kind of the poster boy for it with AIM right now.
Yeah.
So it's just you.
Yeah.
You're processing. You're like, there's everything right here.
I do everything from start to finish. You know, Jamie, the JKS of JKS Mortgage, he does. The good thing about it is I'm left to sell. You know, he handles everything, call reports, compliance stuff, you know. When we get audited, he's the one that's dealing with the
auditors. You're the producer for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, he produces.
Right.
I mean, but I'm just saying, like, it frees me up to just focus on loans. And of course, I'm very active in AIM and everything, so I shouldn't say I'm totally freed up.
No.
But, you know, I'm I work from home. I don't have a processor. I don't have an assistant. I rarely use UWM's processor's assist. I pretty much do everything from start to finish myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you equate, I'm assuming you have a lot of good systems in place that you have to follow.
Yeah.
Or is it pretty, is it reactionary? I mean, our business is, but you're pretty proactive with your systems.
Yeah, I mean, I have my system, and then, you know, that system is only as good as things blowing up.
Well, sure.
You know? But no, I do have a system. You know, I don't, it's not that my system is the best system. It's one thing I would preach to everybody is, who cares what your system is as long as it works for you?
Mm-hmm.
The key is find a system that works and stick to it religiously. My system is my system. I mean, I never meet people face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been probably over a year since I met a customer face-to-face. I rarely see realtors face-to-face. I get in front of the Redfin group about 3 or 4 times a year because they're a group, whereas, you know, most realtors never go into their office,
no.
So it's not... it's not where I go in and see them. You know, and I do the application online. You know, I take the phone call. I talk to the customer immediately. I say, well, the next first step is you got to get an application in. I'll email you a link to the application.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my agents already have that link and they're sending it out already. So a lot of my agents are good about that. They'll call up and say, hey, you know, Joe Smith is filling an application out tonight. Mm-hmm. Look for him to email you.
What percentage of realtors do that for you, do you think? Have you coached them pretty well to do that?
Because
we do the same type of process.
Probably about 20-25% of my realtors.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And you've coached them and they understand.
They understand it. And I don't mind them doing that. A couple of them still forget to call me. So, and then I get this strange application that pops into my queue and I'm like, okay. And then on our application, it says who referred you. And of course, those are always the one they'll just put realtor.
Yeah.
You know.
Or other.
Yeah, or other. Yeah. Yeah.
the
realtors actually take the time to call me and tell me that somebody's coming through. They're the ones that'll fill out, you know, Mr. Whatever at real estate company X.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're the ones that always tell me, well, I already know where you came from, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for the most part, though, it's like I said, mostly the customers calling me. Or realtors texting me saying, hey, you know, I just left Mr. Smith. Here's his number. Contact him. He's interested. And I'll do some out calling like that. I'd say it's 75-25. 75% they call me. 25% I'm calling.
How many, like, verbal apps are you taking right now? Or everything online?
I don't even remember last time I took a verbal app.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's us. I've done maybe one this year. We'll close about 120 units or so in the 10 months we opened our shop. But it's...
I'm really, really against doing verbal apps.
Because you're going to miss something, right?
Well,
is that one of them?
Well, the biggest reason is I don't want, if they do the app online and there's something that they neglect to tell me and I never find, and it comes up later, it's on them.
It's on them.
Mm-hmm. If I take the verbal app and they don't tell me something and then it later blows up, it could be on me, and then the fingers point back at me. At least this way, I can say, well, look, you did the application. Why didn't you check off that box that says you're paying child support, you know? I mean, you know, you try to – after I get the application, of course I talk to the customer after I pull the credit, and I go over everything again with them. I do that.
Touch point, in my opinion. We're the same way. You got to fill it out, and then I'll review it. Then I'll give them a call or do a video or text them or whatever it is. I'm like, we have to fill this out. Yeah, same.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I'm doing it. I mean, I call them afterwards, kind of hit the data points. Hey, your credit's good shape, which most of my customers are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of go through the next step, which is, you know, I need these documents. You know, and that's kind of my flow. I mean, I get the app, I get their documents, I do the pre-qual. I make sure that, you know, I give my realtors a good solid prequal. I don't just throw something out there just to make them happy. I've had some realtors say, well, why can't you do it without their credit? Well, you're talking to the wrong guy. Call Quicken.
They'll
do the prequal without credit.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed about you as well, which I love, and maybe you can touch on this. You know how you want to do your business, and you're not really wavering from it.
No.
You're good at saying no the right way.
Yeah.
Right? And like you said, you do really your conventional loans. If something's, what, FHA or just not in your wheelhouse, you don't feel it's right to do it because it's not what you do for the client.
Yeah, I haven't done a VA in, I don't know how many years, 7-8 years maybe. I don't even know, maybe longer than that. This year, I will probably close 5 FHAs.
Okay.
And the only reason I'm closing 5 FHAs, well, 2 of them were people I knew
Okay.
that I didn't feel right, pass them off on somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And three of them were applications I took that once I got the credit score
you had
back,
to flip it.
Or- I was like, okay, this is an easy FHA, not the best for conventional, mm-hmm. but it's an easy FHA. Okay, I'll keep it. You know?
Yeah.
I pull their credit, and it looks like a FHA that's going to need credit yeah, rescoring, yeah. Credit building, non-traditional credit, any of that type of stuff. No, I pass it off.
You pass it off to someone else that's going to be able to spend the time. It's not like you're just being like, no, have a good day. You're getting it to someone.
Yeah. I mean, one of my realtors.
No non-QM, none of that crap.
None of that stuff. No. None of that stuff. I have broker partners in Arizona that I'm friendly with that I pass those off to. I mean, just, what was it, two Fridays ago, I think it was? I think it was two Fridays ago. One of my longtime realtors calls me, and it's like 8 o'clock on a Friday night. And she's like, hey, this guy, I'm showing him a house tomorrow at 9 a.m. You know, can you do a quick app? I did the app. I pulled the guy's credit. He's got nothing. I mean, this guy's 30 years old. Got nothing. A great job, good down payment, nothing. Not a single trade line, nothing. Mm-hmm. No scores, nothing. Now, he could build trade lines and go FHA all day because he's got good money down. Mm-hmm. Everything's good.
Everything else is good.
So I just simply called, you know, I got on the phone, I texted Matt and Lisa over at Lund Mortgage and said, hey, do you want this? Can you handle this? And mm-hmm. immediately Matt texts back, yeah, I'll handle it, you know, and I connected him with my realtor and I.
Now everyone's happy.
Yeah. My realtor's happy. Matt and Lisa's thinking, great, Todd gave me a deal. I've given them a number of deals this year, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Andy Price over at Price Mortgage, you know, I mean, I'm starting to try to get some stuff his way, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to be everything to everybody.
No.
And
to put in perspective, how many units do you think you're doing this year as a one-man shop? I want to put that into perspective for people.
240 to 250.
Yeah, that's a lot, you know?
I mean, I had a slow January and February. I shouldn't say slow. I mean, January and February, I think I did 12 and 14 or something those 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But since March, I haven't dropped below 20 units a month.
And what about refis? You doing a bunch of refis right now?
Very few. I'm giving basically my refi business. I pass over to Jamie because he's not as busy as me.
Got it.
I mean, he's been taking probably half of my refis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm probably leaving refis on the table because I should be marketing to my clients better. But you know, I try to get in touch with a few of them every couple days, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to pass them over to him, and I'm doing some myself. I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to paint the picture for everyone that it can be done to do a bunch of units and do it the type of business you want to do and still make sure everyone's happy for the most part getting referred, and you're okay with that. You don't need every single deal.
And again, this goes back to me saying that the housing crash was personally the best thing that ever happened to me, because career-wise, because I had, in 2009, I had nothing to sell but clean, conventional purchase business.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I had. Nothing else existed really in my world at that time, you know. FHA wasn't available because back then, FHA, a little broker shop like us couldn't do FHAs. You had to have that whole sponsorship thing and... Yeah, I think it was, I want to say 2010 or 11, they opened FHA up to everybody.
Okay.
So there was a couple years where literally all I had was conventional, clean conventional purchase business. It kind of seemed like it sucked at the time.
But, you know.
It made me totally refocus my thought process, and now it's enabled me to be that clean conventional guy, you know. Now, I'm not saying I've done that solely since 2009, I went through the years of where I did, I did FHAs and I did the mm-hmm. less than great deals. But I got so busy with my realtors over the last probably 5 years now, or probably last 5 years or so, I've been able to just focus solely on clean, conventional and jumbo business.
Yeah.
And
that's what you're best at.
And that's what I'm best at. And that's how I've handled with realtors is I've just said, hey, look, you know, one of the misconceptions that when guys meet me at AIM events or talk to me on Facebook or whatever, or call me on the phone, and they'll be like, you know, I want to be you. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, you can't just call your realtor partners and say, guess what? I'm only doing your clean, conventional jumbo business. I mean, because they're going to look at you like, oh, yeah, you're going to cherry pick. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, right.
It's about massaging that realtor over time to convince them that you're the guy for that. And that's kind of the way I went about it, is I just kind of worked with my real estate partners and said, hey, you know, look, I'm not really the best at Govy. I mean, I can do it, and I can probably do it better than the next guy, but it's just not really in my wheelhouse. So, you know, you don't want to be a one loan officer shop, and I know you're not. You know, you can have the greatest realtor partner in the world, and they have other loan officers they work with. They'd have to.
Yeah, let's be honest here. Yeah, we don't own real estate agents. Yeah. We don't own them.
So, you know, I just kind of said, look, you know, you want to spread the wealth around. So I'll tell you what, the guy down the road that, you know, you're dealing with me and you're dealing with the guy at Fairway. You know, why not give the guy at Fairway all your stuff that I don't do, and then let me focus on the stuff that I'm just blowing everybody's socks off at, you know? And that's the clean conventional stuff where I'm one of the lowest rates out there, and I have no lender fees. You know, I don't charge a processing fee and an underwriting. I don't charge for anything. You know, it's a clean, no fee loan, and other than third party fees. So, over time, my realtor started realizing, hey, that is a better way to go. You know, let's send that business to Todd. Let's send the other stuff to my secondary guy. It keeps him happy. He feels like he's not shut out, and I don't have to figure out, well, should I give this one to Todd or this one? They just know instinctively now, hey, my conventional business, I throw over there. My non-conventional business, I go over there, you know, and it's worked.
Nice, nice. So if we're talking about getting back to real estate agents. All right, so if someone was starting, I don't want to say like right, but you've been in the business and you want to build your real estate book up again, right? Get some more relationships. Where would you start? I mean, you're already deep into it. You're not pulling lists, but what do you think you should do?
So there's a lot of the mortgage training, mortgage coaching people out there that really preach, you know, cold calling.
Yeah, we were talking about this.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. I'm not here to say they're doing it wrong. For me, it's wrong, okay? Personally, I'm not going to call a cold call realtor that I don't know. I'm going to build it organically. And the reason why, I always look at everything from a standpoint of how I react. When recruiters call me, when lead companies call me, when anybody calls me cold to try to sell me on something, I'm usually not very open to the idea. It's rare that they get past 15 seconds into the phone call without me just either getting them to politely go away or they get clicked.
Yeah.
You know, and I always joke with everybody that you get 15 seconds of the polite professional Todd when you're trying to sell me something. And after 15 seconds, it ain't going to go well.
You get the Slayer Todd.
Yeah, exactly. You get the rain and blood guy, you know?
Right.
So I always look at everything like, if I hate it, why is the next guy going to like it? So, and I've had realtors tell me that they literally hate Mondays because they know from Monday morning through early afternoon, their phones are going to be ringing off the hook with cold calls from loan officers because they've been trained through different various programs to do 25 or 50 realtor phone calls every Monday, Marketing Monday. I've had realtors say they hate it. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I'd hate it too. You know, I've built all my realtor base through organic ways, such as one of my big things I push is meeting them through title companies.
Got it.
Over the years, I've went out of my way to be as helping and as nice and as accommodating as possible to escrow officers. You know, if you called 100 escrow officers, which is probably 300 in Phoenix, but, you know, Phoenix is a big area. But if you pick out, I'd say, you know, 20 escrow officers at random in Phoenix, 18 of them probably know me. And every single one of those 18 is probably going to say, oh, yeah, he's a good guy. I like working with him. He makes it really easy. You know, he handles the UWM UClose 2.0 all by himself and just hands me docs. And I don't have to do anything. And I hate UWM's UClose 2.0. You know, not me. They hate it.
They hate it. That's standard every state.
I order my own wires for them. I just do anything I can to make the escrow officer's job easier. And then I make sure that I'm friendly with them. And the reason why I do this is not because I want to do that extra work. And not because I'm just such a great guy, I want to do it for him. Although I try to be a good guy, you know, all the time. But over the years, like I said, if you called 20 escrow officers in Phoenix, 18's going to know me. 18's going to have good things to say about me. Those escrow officers, a lot of them have my business cards in their desk. I can think of a dozen off the top of my head that has my business cards in their desk. And who's the first person to usually hear a realtor? Really complain. Bitching and complaining. Yeah. It's the escrow officer because they're waiting for their check. They're waiting for their closing, and the escrow officer's calling the realtor saying, I still don't have docs. I still don't have wires. We're waiting on XYZ
and
down
people
the street.
Remember this. I mean, that's the most stressful time. That's where they're going to remember. That's going to be stuck in their head. They're going to remember all the other good stuff.
Absolutely. And what happens is those escrow officers are already friendly with that realtor. That realtor's been referring that escrow officer business for years. Mm-hmm. So they're friendly. They probably go out and have drinks together and everything else. I find that escrow officers and realtors usually have personal relationships a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that realtor will be really upset, and that escrow officer will be like, you know, why don't you call Todd Bitterer or JKS? You know, my biggest account, I mean, I get probably one of the things I get asked about the most is how did you get in with Redfin? Because honestly, Redfin's one of my biggest accounts.
I mean, and they're considered what, a discount?
They're a discount, bro. Yeah, the realtors are salaried, they're not commissioned. The realtors take incoming leads all day, they don't have to go out and door knock. Mm-hmm. A lot of other agents look down on Redfin because they think they're not experienced, but they're actually really experienced people. I love working with them. I love working with my traditional agents, but Redfin is a big company, and I get a lot of business out of Redfin, and a lot of guys are like, well, how'd you ever get in there? An escrow officer at Old
That's
Republic.
That's how it started.
The former manager of that Redfin, the former market manager in Phoenix, who oversaw all the realtors in Phoenix, was at an Old Republic office and was having a loan blow up with a local retail company, Academy.
Yeah.
And the escrow officer was like, why do you keep sending business there? We go through this all the time. We're sitting around waiting on the funds to be released while they're reviewing the package. And Lori, the former Redfin manager, said, yeah, I really should be talking to some other loan officers out there. And
well, sometimes they don't even know. Maybe
they don't.
If they're only doing 5 or 6 a year, let's say, transactions, and that happens every time, they just think that's what it is.
Normal. Yeah. So the escrow officer said, well, it's not normal. I just closed on with this guy yesterday. I've dealt with him for God knows how many years. Here's his business card. I get a call, and it was funny. I didn't even know who Redfin really was at the time. I saw a little bit of their signs. This is before they were really big in Phoenix. And she goes, hey, you know, we have, you know, such and such over at Old Republic told me to call you. And yeah, okay, great. You know, and we did a deal together. It went really well. We did another deal together. Mm-hmm. It went really well. Then she invited me into the office. And, you know, I don't know how many, it's been a couple, you know, 2.5, 3 years now. And I think I'm at about 300 closings with Redfin.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I'm, if I'm not at 300, I'm getting close to it. You know, I've lost track with Redfin.
Well, it's a good point of that's a great spot to start if you need to build your database up, because escrow officers or title, whatever you want to call it, it's different every state, of course, but they're hustling like us. Like they're not buying leads. I mean, there's always been, and I've been preaching on this a bit more, there's always been this hierarchy of what? Real estate agents, lender, title, escrow, right? Yep. And that's kind of gone away. And so you can't be a dick to people anymore. No. Everyone knows everyone, and treat everyone with the same respect. And I feel like you have this teamwork. It just flows better.
Well, and again, so besides the title companies, I also do it through listing agents. But one of the things that I see posted on Facebook and talked about in groups and everything that drives me absolutely insane, but also kind of makes me think, okay, great for me, is the constant berating about how bad realtors suck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I swear, I almost think there's a loan officer store out there that sells realtor suck t-shirts, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, because so many loan officers, I'd go out on a limb here and say probably 70% of all loan officers hate realtors.
Yeah.
I mean, I see it every day online, you know? Bitching about realtors.
And that's not to say you might have a weird convo with a real estate agent. That's always going to happen. It could be with anybody, though.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of just in a week ago, I had a not-so-great experience with a realtor I didn't know. But I'll be damned if I'm going to go online and bash them.
Yeah.
And I'll be damned if I'm going to do nothing but be sweet as hell to this realtor, you know? I mean,
and sometimes that first initial, with a brand-new real estate agent, I've seen this, you have too, you have some sort of conflict. Then you get through it, and you become better partners anyway,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Happens all the time. You need that every once in a while.
But I think, I can't remember if it was in Vegas at Fuse or if it was at the Scottsdale thing that, you know, I was on one of the panels, and I was trying to tell people, you know, they teach you, you know, when you first start at the bottom rung of sales and you're on the phones, they always teach you to smile when you talk to people because it relates in your attitude on the phone. I'd say the same thing about realtors. You know, you can't bitch and complain about how bad realtors suck in Facebook groups and then go out and get realtor business, because if you truly believe that realtors suck,
it's going to come off.
It's going to come across that way. It's like the person that hates dogs. That dog sense that you don't like them. I'm not really a big dog person myself, but you know, it's just, we have cats.
Yeah.
So. But it's just, yeah, I mean, you need to change your mindset. I mean, if you don't like realtors, I don't know what to tell you, but keep dialing leads and buying leads, and guys like me will keep closing real estate business, and I never buy a lead, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of that out there, too. I'm sure you see it on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, there's millions of these people, it seems like. Now, some are better than others, and they're trying to coach you with, here's how we can, you know, they have funnels. I personally don't use them because I do everything organic, but I can see how some of them are good. But there's a lot of that push out there. Just buy leads, buy leads, buy leads. And they're tough, man.
I don't know.
They're tough to work.
You know, I mean, I know there's a lot. There's a lot of loan officers out there that preach consumer direct. Mm-hmm. And some of them are friends of mine. You know, there's a lot of them out there that preach consumer direct, and they like that business. I personally, I don't know if I could stay in this business if I had to dial leads. I mean, I remember the days of dialing leads, and I hated it, you know. But that's just me. But I love realtors. I get along with realtors. I mean, a couple of people joked I'm a realtor whisperer or whatever. It's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I speak their language, but I just get along with them all. I've yet to meet a realtor I couldn't get along with. I've had a few great, not so great experiences, but I still get along with them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, to me, that's where the business is at. But, you know, especially when the refis dry up.
I mean, 100%.
Yeah, when the refis dry up, I mean, you can buy purchase leads, but how great are those purchase leads? Yeah, you buy a purchase lead, you get the customer an application, they end up going to a realtor, and that realtor ends up sending them to a guy like me.
To Todd, yeah, exactly.
And unless you have a low comp plan like me with no fees, I'm probably going to take the customer, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I just, when I see these guys bashing realtors, I mean, it bugs me because I think, why are you shooting yourself in the foot? Mm-hmm. But then I think, okay, great for me. And, you know, more pie for me, you know?
Yeah, we're doing more of a, we don't buy any leads. I've tried it a few years ago just to test it out. I'm like, this is, it's driving me insane. But we do a lot with just organic, just being who we are on social media or whatnot. So we get a lot of the consumer just directly to us. Then I can form a relationship with the real estate agent by saying, oh, what area? Okay, I got someone great over here. So we kind of do it the reverse way sometimes, and then comes back the other way. Yeah. That's a great way to do it.
You know, when Zillow first came out, Zillow. Anyway, I shouldn't speak their name. When the Z came out.
Yeah, when the Z.
You know, they came out with that long form lead thing. I think it was like late.
I remember that.
In Phoenix, it was late 2015. And I was doing well, but I thought, you know what, let me just dabble in this. Maybe I could make my realtors happier if I threw some leads at them, you know. I tried it. It was horrible. I mean, it was a couple $1,000 just flushed down the toilet.
Well, when most people fill something out online, they're filling out other places, and then there's 10 people in the mix, and it's...
And I don't know if Z has changed their ways, but back then, they told us, I said, well, what's the policy for bad leads? Well, you know, bad come with a good, it all equals out.
Yeah.
I had like three in a row that were like Donald Duck, you know, Mickey Mouse. I don't even
That's how they actually fill their name in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Charles Manson.
The number 696969.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I had like three in a row, and they were like $120, $150 leads because they were like higher end leads. And, I called the Z rep, and they're like, no, sorry, we don't refund. I see, even blatant ones you don't refund. I understand if I think it might not be a great lead, but these are blatant. Like, there is no spy out there named Donald Duck looking for a house.
Right.
You know? No, we don't refund those. We just figure it comes with it. And I tried the program for a few more weeks. I threw about $2,000 at it and never got a thing out of it.
Yeah.
You know, never. And that was my last foray into leads. And, yeah, so I don't even that's something else that blog guys ask me about. They're like, well, how do you get realtors to send you business if you don't feed them? I was like, well.
And you don't meet them either.
Very seldom do I ever meet a realtor, you know.
Well, could you touch on that? Like, if you have a new realtor, I mean, do they even care about meeting with you in your area?
Not really.
They just want to know results, and they already got maybe a recommendation from escrow agent anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, is that how it's kind of working?
So the ones that are referred from escrow officers, those are the easy ones, you know, because those are simple. It's the ones that come to me from the like listing side. So besides the escrow officers, I'm really big on as soon as I get a transaction started and the listing agent is somebody I don't know, which is 75% of the time, mm-hmm. there's a ton of realtors out there. You know, I try to see who they are and if they're somebody that I want to do business with. I mean, if they're like the agent that's done two deals in the last 2 years because it's a hobby mm-hmm. to them, I don't want to deal with that mm-hmm. agent like that. Never.
What's the minimum for you, kind of? I mean, it's black or white, but.
Yeah, I like to see that they've done at least six transactions in the last year.
Okay.
You know, I really like the ones that have done at least a dozen or more. If they can average one a month, you know, I get some of my Redfin agents close 40 deals a year.
Yeah.
You know,
what are they salaried to? Not to jump off topic. Do you have an idea or you don't have to say it if you don't want to? I'm just wondering, like, what maybe it is.
It's not a gray. I mean, I think they're somewhere around a couple thousand a month.
Okay.
And then they get like bonuses. They don't get commission, but they get bonuses.
They get bonuses.
But you know what? They get full benefits. They get stock options.
All right,
they get,
that's cool. I don't know much about it. So that's why I'm wondering.
They get their cell phones paid for. They get all their education paid for. I mean, they literally have no expenses. So I've had a few Redfin agents say, you know what? I could probably do better in a traditional sense, but I'm out door knocking. I like the fact that I have health insurance and all this, and I still make a good living. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I could hustle and make more in the traditional world, but I got like security.
But that's how
they
want to do it. I mean, this all goes back to doing it how you want to do it, setting your own plan and working around that. That's what's great about real estate and mortgages. You can do that.
Exactly. But so back to listing agents. So when I see that it's somebody I want to work with, I really put on the wow factor. You know, it's like I go out of my way. Well, first of all, let me back up.
Mm-hmm.
I tell all my buyer's agents, whenever you're submitting that contract, CC me on the offer.
Yep.
Because I immediately call, I usually wait 20 to 30 minutes. I call the listing agent and say, hey, you know, Kelly over at Redfin just sent you this offer on Mr. and Mrs. Smith. By the way, I'm Todd. I'm the loan officer that's handling them. I've already pre-qualified them. Let me walk you through how strong this customer is. A lot of times they were like, oh, I just don't have time. But a lot of them were really like, I cannot tell you how often they're like blown away. At least 75% of the time, the listing agent would be like, wow, this is great. They're actually shocked that I'm taking the time to call to discuss the customer with them before, just for the offer.
Mm-hmm.
Two things have happened. My customer thanks me. Kelly, the Redfin agent or whoever the agent is, likes it because I'm helping them get under their offer accepted. And now I've opened up dialogue with the listing agent on a way that they're not used to. And then from there, I just keep them updated every step of the way. You know, I keep them updated. I constantly, in Arizona, we have these things called LSUs, which are loan status updates we have to send out.
Okay.
I keep them on
time. Oh, you have to send them out?
We have to send them out per the contract. Yeah.
Never even heard of that before.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's
loan
good, though.
I hate it. I think it's great.
I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a form. You check off where you're at in the file, and you send it out weekly.
Okay.
I send it out every time something
happens.
So
do that whether you have to or not.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. Okay.
If your state doesn't use that form, just keep the communication open.
I want to see those forms. I would love to get that so I can know what we're doing. That'd be cool. Yeah.
I just wow them with good communication and keep them in the loop. And then what I do is at the end, I usually call them up at the after we've closed and funded. I usually call them like that same day and just say, hey, thank you. You know, you help keep things moving along. I appreciate it. If you ever need anything in the future, just give me a call. And then I usually follow up about 2 weeks later with an email just saying, hey, it was great working with you a few weeks ago on the Smith loan. I'm about as good as you're going to find out there for conventional business, you know. Keep me in mind, please. You know, I'm not going to telemarket you and start bugging you. This is my last communication.
That's what I was going to ask. Is that the last one for the most part?
It is. Yeah. It is. Because if they don't want to work with me, they don't
want
to work with me.
You're not going to bother them. Right.
What I'll say about that is I strike out way more than I ever accomplish anything. I might do that 40 times a year, 50 times a year. And maybe I'll pick up one or two realtors a year that way.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? I picked up one or two realtors a year. Two of my top producing realtors were listing agents that I met that way. But a lot of loan officers think, well, it's a waste of time. They never get back to you. Well, yeah, 90% of them are never going to get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? When you do get one to get back to you, and you do a good job on the next loan and the next loan. Now you've got a realtor that's yours for life.
Well, I think loan officers forget we're dealing with the buyer's agent all the time, right? They're running estimates. You know they're driving around to 100 houses. But the listing agent also has a tough job with that seller. Like, I think we get disconnected from that. I mean, they're getting beat up. You know, I want this price. Oh, I have to do this to the house. You bet this loan better close. So by you just making a simple call saying, this is good, I'm putting my reputation on it, it's going to make them feel much better to talk to their seller.
Absolutely.
I think we forget about that because we're not involved usually.
And again, it's just consistency. You have to do it consistently because if you just do it here and there, you're going to probably never hear from it. But if you consistently do it, you're going to pick up agents every year. And I'll use it as a baseball analogy. It just came out of the World Series. I don't follow baseball that closely, but a 300 hitter is considered a great hitter. They'll get a big contract at the end of the year. That means that that guy has struck has failed 7 out of 10 times, but he's considered a top hitter in his field if he's averaging over 300.
It's a really good point.
So I mean, you know, if I can average, if I can fail 9 out of 10 times with listing agents, but succeed on the 10th, if I do that 50 times a year, that means I picked up five realtors like that year, you know?
And the best part is, you know, you're telling everyone what they should do. You know a lot of people aren't going to do it, and you're cool with that because you're going to pick them all up anyway.
Well, you know, I don't know if you saw this on Facebook the other day, but a couple days ago before I came, it was over the weekend, a lady that was a female loan officer that was at the Arizona event in Scottsdale in August. She posted the other day on Facebook in our group, and she said, "Hey, you know, I just want to, you know, mention that I used what Todd said, and you know, I wowed the listing agent." And then she posted a conversation that the listing agent
a
screenshot of the text, and basically she just said, "I picked up this listing agent now as one of my referral partners.
That's awesome.
Because I did the wow thing with the listing agent that Todd told me to." And I was telling her online, I said, "You know, this is the greatest compliment you can give me because it makes." All the time I take away from what I do to try to help other loan officers in AIM and broker and the broker world and everything else, it means that it's working, you know? And I made a joke about, well, hopefully it wasn't one of my agents because she's in my market, you know? I was doing this for 200.
Right.
The Scottsdale thing was 250 of my competitors. But you know what? It's like, I don't care.
There's so much out there, man.
There's so much out there. And if I teach another loan officer my technique, and they take one of my agents away from me, then I deserve to lose that agent anyway. That means I was screwing up somewhere, you know, because another loan officer doing exactly what I'm doing against one of my own agents should not take that. It can't be.
No, you can't. Yeah, that's cool. All right. Well, we have about 5 minutes left.
Cool.
So I want to know, since you've been in this industry for 25 years, where do you think it's going? you know, surface level, if you want, in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, it's I see more consolidation, especially on the retail side. I think the broker channel is going to grow. I mean, we see that, obviously. It's happening. There's no slowing this down.
You think the middle people are going to have a tough time? I feel big banks are always going to be here.
Yep.
And then maybe the smaller type local loan officer, the middle, are going to have a tough time with the layers.
I think that you either have to be big or small. I think that, you know, lean and mean is the way to go because everything is – it's Amazon world we live in. I mean, you know, you can't have the bloated. The bloated retail was dying when these rates started falling at the beginning of the year. I mean, yeah, we've all enjoyed these lower rates, but honestly, I wish we were at 5% this whole year, not 3.5% or whatever we've been at, because a lot of those big bloated retail shops were just on their last leg when they got a big boom. It saved them. They refied and started churning all their old customers. My thinking is that lean and mean is going to be the way to go. You're not going to be able to have high rates and high bloated cost. Overhead is a big deal.
Bunch of management over whatever it is. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to some of these retail guys and they just can't believe, and they're told that we're lying. When you know, when a retail guy goes to their manager and says, "Well, JKS Mortgage is offering this customer 3.75 and we're at 4.25% and they're at no fees and we're at 1,800 fees," the first thing the manager tells the guy is, well, they're lying. Yeah. Get it locked out.
Well, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The manager knows.
Well, the manager knows, but the loan officer on the ground floor has a tough time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then eventually they come around and they realize, hey, we're not lying. And those are the loan officers that right now I'm trying to recruit, you know, mm-hmm. and not recruit for working for me. I was joking earlier that, you know, I'm not hiring anybody. Maybe I am talking about a system, but
Right.
for
we
most part, I'm not
that.
Hiring anybody.
Don't sell out, Todd. Don't sell out.
I was joking with Mike Cordes over at Nexta that, you know, hey, you know, put me on your Christmas list because I'm trying to get you loan officers. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's the truth. I mean, Nexta or Price Mortgage or Lisa Lund or any of my buddies in Arizona or out of state, you know, if I see a loan officer that wants to talk to me about switching, I'm mm-hmm. happy to spend the time talk to them, and then I'm happy to connect them to whoever, whether it be Nexa or Evan at Epcot and any of these, you know. But yeah, lean and mean's where it's going because everybody is conditioned to the Amazon world we're in. Mm-hmm. You know, service.
This makes sense.
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't have to sacrifice service. Like, I wouldn't, just because I'm cheap doesn't get me the business. What gets me my business is the service. What keeps the people with me is the price, you know. I'll win on service.
Can you say that again? That was awesome.
Yeah.
So the service
gets me to business and the price is what keeps
you need.
It.
You need both. You can't be in that direct lender retail world and say you got to just sell service. So it's not. Let's be realistic.
I mean, again, using Amazon as an example. I mean, people wouldn't use Amazon if they didn't get it brought right to their doorstep in 2 days flat. I mean, I've been a Prime member for as long as I can remember now. Mm-hmm. And if it took 2 weeks to get a package.
What's the
I
point?
Wouldn't be going to Amazon. I'd run down to Target,
you know? Yeah.
So you have to have service, but you also have to have a reasonable price. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where the business is going just because. And look at all the fintech guys who are getting into the space. Mm-hmm. I mean,
with no industry knowledge, some of them.
Yeah. I mean,
it's insane.
Better Mortgage, Sabonic, there's rumors that Amazon's getting into it. I mean, these guys concern me. But they should scare the living hell out of the retail guys.
Yep.
I mean, I get beat by Better, but I usually keep it because I'm close. Mm-hmm. And my realtors will say, please don't go to that online lender. Okay, well, Todd's close. I'll stick with him. They're not sticking with me if I'm a half a point higher.
No. You know? It's not even close.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's where it's going. Lean and mean and, you know, and education. I mean.
And having the right service.
Yeah.
And teamwork with every party involved, wowing people.
Yeah, wowing people. And again, service only comes with education. I mean, you can't not understand your product and your craft mm-hmm. and give good service. Just because you answer your phone doesn't mean you're giving good service. Mm-mm. Answer your damn phone, though, people. I mean, if I can leave one other thing about service, if I'm physically able to answer my phone, I answer my phone. I will answer my phone. At dinner, I will answer my phone while I'm driving down the road and with the top down in the 85 degree weather we have in Scottsdale.
Not here.
I will.
20 degrees.
Yeah, 20. Yeah. I ain't no convertibles here. I'll tell the customer. I'll say, hey, you know, I'm in the middle. I'm wherever. I can't talk, but can I call you back in about 20 minutes or however long? Mm-hmm. 2 hours because I just got to dinner. You know, people hate voicemails. I don't know who likes to leave voicemails. You know, I mean, so. They'd like that. It's a personal touch, and like I said, occasionally.
And that's not going away. No. I don't think any robot can.
No, and
take
of course
that away.
I use my voicemail. I mean, because there's times I'm on the air and I'm on the other line. I can't get over to people, or there's times I'm sleeping in the middle of the night. You know, and I mean, I have some customers that have called me at midnight, expecting a voicemail for me to return their
and
call the next day.
Up.
I answered the damn phone.
Yeah.
And they usually are taken aback. They're like, I'm
don't
sorry.
Know what to do.
Like, don't be sorry. You called me. You need something. I'm available. So I answered. There's nothing to be sorry about. I mean, if I didn't want to answer the phone, I wouldn't have answered it, you know? But yeah, I cannot harp enough because you would not believe how many people complain, realtors complain that their loan officers never answer the phone. Mm-hmm. And then they wait for a phone call back. It's like, answer your phone. It's just simple. It's not rocket science.
Well, there you have it. Todd Bitter, answer your damn phone.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, man. That was
right,
awesome.
Buddy.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Broker podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single episode. Head over to aimgroup.com/broker-to-broker and subscribe on any platform where you listen to podcasts.